Yaloi, and welcome to episode 13 of Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. This week it's Dr. Richard Harkness, and it's only Dr. Richard. Neither Jacob nor I could make it this week. Episode 13, lucky for some. Off you go, Richard. After a little bit of music first.
Hello and welcome to Back to the Mac, episode 13. Tonight is a rather special edition, as it's just yours truly holding the fort tonight. The show is about Macs, by Mac people, for Mac people. I won't bore you with the intricacies of why Johnny and Jacob are not with me tonight, but I'll just get cracking with the very scant little bit of news that I have available to tell you about tonight. First of all, more penny pinching options to our listeners have become apparent. You can make a further saving on refurb products, I understand, by going to eBay. You can make small additional savings over the refurb store. Sometimes, certainly I've read, for up to $100 in the US, and possibly similar in the UK as well. But certainly it's been confirmed in the US. It's thought that these might be refurbed products that are starting to come towards the end of the line. But nonetheless, probably a great way to get yourself a further saving. The other news is that there's a further developer's build of 10.7.3 being released. There's been an awful lot of these developer releases come out for this build, so it's not really any indication that it's going to land anytime soon. And it's probably going to land shortly before 10.9 at this rate. But nevertheless, it's always interesting to see that things are moving forwards. Other more interesting news is that there's a new version of Dropbox available for download. Version 2 has just been recently released, thought to improve the process of sharing folders and improve notifications of this. This will require you to install version 2 of Dropbox. Interestingly, I found this a difficult experience to do. There was not a really clear path of how to do this. I only discovered it by looking at Dropbox's blog through a link in another article. Now, it may be that perhaps I've just been a bit too quick and a bit too keen, but it's not really intuitive as to how this update's going to occur. Certainly Dropbox on the Mac, you have a little icon that's on top right on the bar across the top of the your Mac, and in that there is no option to check for an update. Or even if you go to the one that I thought might be helpful would be the launch the Dropbox website, but that actually just takes you to your web-based Dropbox interface. It doesn't take you to their home website. Also, even when I looked through in preferences, I couldn't find a way to update through that either. So none of that is particularly user-friendly, really. As I say, perhaps this is something that's going to change in time. It's very early days, and I'm just be interested to see how Dropbox makes people aware that this version 2 update is available. Am I going to be trying it? Yes, I will, but not yet. I think with anything, the 0.0 release, you've got to be a little bit brave to give it a go. I'm sure it's rock solid. I think Dropbox has always been quite a rock solid service, and I can't imagine that they're going to release anything that's too half-baked. However, I'm sure there's going to be some teething problems in there. And frankly, for what I use Dropbox for, its current capabilities are more than adequate for what I need. It's not essential for me. And I would certainly say to anybody, if Dropbox is a core part of your working life, day-to-day activities, and your workflow, I really wouldn't think about updating just yet. I'd wait at least till the next iteration before you do it. Why not go over to the Dropbox page in the show notes and on the Dropbox blog and have a read through what the updates are for yourself. You might want to consider then whether you think it's worth making the slight leap of faith that always comes with a 0.0 release. Moving along to an item that's a bit more lighthearted and had me chuckling a little bit, and also just amused at the amount of time and effort people put into this. There was a little sort of fun competition over at colourofmac.com for people to create their versions of OS X 10.9 for the best mascot ideas. There's a lot of fun little suggestions in there. OS X Siamese, which the tagline for that is One OS, All Devices, We Finally Cut the Crap. there's OS X Cat Lady, OS X Jocelyn Wildstein. I don't know who she is, but she's got a lot of plastic surgery going on there by the looks of things. There's also OS X White Tiger. Now this one's got me really intrigued because the White Tiger is actually a real thing, so it's not a completely stupid suggestion, unlike a lot of the other ones which are there. And by that I don't mean to distract from what other people have done, because it was meant as a fun competition. But it's a version of the Bengali tiger, and it's a recessive mutant of that. If you put white tiger into Google, you'll see a lot of images come up of a white tiger, and they are stunningly beautiful creatures actually. And I could easily imagine Apple using this as a possible name for the next one. Actually, I think whoever's done this is quite insightful, and I can imagine the photography image for the logo would look stunning as well. You know, and Apple can sell it along the lines of all the power of a lion, but incredibly rare and beautiful, or you know, there'll be a way of spinning that. So you know, there's definitely something to be said for that naming, I think. So other than that, there really is very little to tell you about Apple news this week. It's been an incredibly slow week, and the majority of the news has, as usual, been based around iOS things, but we don't do iOS on this show, so we're not about to. The only other thing that I can mention is that the second edition of Mac User Magazine landed on my door recently, which I was delighted to see. And I'm getting used to the thicker, heavier format of the magazine now. I'm yet to have a chance to have a good read through it. In fact, I think there's still some stuff in the first magazine that I haven't had a chance to read yet. I'm looking, and this is slightly off topic, I apologise, reading Wired magazine now, as I'm quite enjoying the forward-thinking approach that's often taken in that magazine. Not so much about what's happening to technology right now, but what's going to be happening to technology. And that's really where Apple lies, isn't it? It's the future of technology. Often Apple will take us to places before a lot of us are ready to go there yet. It's certainly something that's been levied at them recently. They've been criticised for not innovating enough. Indeed, one of Apple's former CEOs recently, John Sculley, felt that Apple were no longer innovating enough. This is perhaps an unfair criticism. Apple have done quite a lot over the last couple of years. There's been the iPhone 5, which is a superb refinement of an already brilliant design. The iPad Mini, okay, it's a smaller iPad, but it's not the same. It's much thinner, it's much lighter. The form factor is slightly different as well. But this is something that Apple are always criticised for. They don't have the whiz bang. They haven't come out with a 17-inch phablet version of the iPhone or an iMac that folds flat and, you know, you can carry it about your house. You could carry the current 27-inch iMac around your house if you want to. It's not particularly heavy anymore, certainly not compared to the old versions. But the point being is that you would look ridiculous. However, this doesn't stop some manufacturers. Yes, Lenovo, we're looking at you again. Apple will often make the first leap of a new technology or a new form of gadget, and then everyone else quickly starts playing catch up. And Apple's goal is always to just keep refining and refining that product, because rarely do they start a product and then change it radically. That certainly seems to be the pattern that I've seen, is that they just continue to refine and refine it and hone it down. I mean, the current iMac has barely changed since its first came out as an all-in-one flat screen iteration many years ago, getting successively more powerful and more slimmer with a wireless keyboard, the implementation of the trackpad, which is a great move forwards, I felt, and certainly something that drew me to using the iMac a lot more, to finally its currently svelte form factor, albeit with a big fat booty. What else can I say really about what's happening with Apple right now? The confidence is dropping in shares. Not really in an area that I'm massively interested in, but given Apple's astonishing wealth, it's always interesting to see how people speculate on them. And, you know, it's having a bit of a slump, but there's almost certainly new things around the corner and things will pick back up again once they come out. You probably heard some bits and bobs about the iWatch. I'm not sure how that would tie in with the Mac, really. I suppose there's always like the crossover with notifications, events, reminders. Perhaps your iWatch could be used to log you into your iMac via proximity sensor as you get closer to it. That would certainly be something that I would like. And equally to lock your iMac as you walk away from it. So there's a functionality. There might be some way that it could be used as a secondary screen in some sense, or in relation to FaceTime on the Mac. I can't quite see, but I'm sure there's lots of people working on that. So the next thing to move along to is I wanted to talk to you a little about a piece of software that we've all been using called Sync.in. It's a web-based service, and you can easily give your own site name, which is then easily rememberable, as long as you give it easily memorable. Yeah, that's a better use of the English language now, isn't it? that we can use and use in any web browser pretty much. Now, we're using it to help coordinate the show's discussion, and it, once registered, it allows us to build up a profile of things that we're going to be talking about throughout the week. And the great thing is that it alters in real time as we're doing it. It syncs really quite quickly, unlike some other services that we've been experimenting with. The version that we're using is also free, and we just found that it's worked very well for us. If you're trying to coordinate something between a group of people, it may be worth a look at this. And as I say, we've tried other things, haven't worked so well. The one fault I would say is that it really doesn't work that great with iOS. Certainly on the iPhone, it renders pretty horrendously, almost to the point of being unusable. Another service which is similar, which I've been involved in using, is Google Docs. And you can obviously share documents that way. That does work nicely on iOS and on the Mac. So that's another good way of coordinating things between a group of people. But there's just something about sync.in that we all like. You can attribute colours to one person, so you can see who's been typing what at the drop of a hat, which is really handy for us when we're podcasting. So it's very easy to say, right, you added that, you talk about that. No doubt if you're trying to plan something, equally you could see from the colour coordination who's added that idea, and get them to work on it or elaborate on it a bit more. And as I say, it syncs in real time, so it's constantly keeping itself up to date. And you can see the changes happening in front of you, which is really quite amazing. If only they would polish the iOS side of it, it would be absolutely fantastic. But still worth a look at. So that's sync.in, S-Y-N-C.in. My hot pick for the week is not a bit of software or a bit of hardware. I've kind of gone off on one this week, I'm afraid, because I'm really quite stuck for something to think of to show you this week. But I wanted to tell you about a great book. I'm sure a lot of you are keen readers. And it's a fantastic book, which has been out for a little while now, called Insanely Simple by Ken Segal. That's S-E-G-A-L-L. We'll put a link in the show notes as normal. And this is a really well-written book. I actually listened to this as an audiobook through Audible, and it was read by Ken himself. Ken's background is he works in an advertising agency called Shiat Day. I think they've had various names through the years, but he's in quite a uniquely privileged position to have worked with Apple and Steve Jobs since very early on. Shiat Day were the people responsible for Apple's famous 1994 advert, and he's been uniquely placed to see the goings on inside of Apple. What I found interesting about this book was there were a lot of stories here about Apple's approach to developing things, obviously, especially in terms of advertising, but also in the way that they deal with other people and other companies that I hadn't heard anywhere else before. Now, given that this book's only come out in the last year or so, that's rather unusual in my experience, because a lot of the times the stories that you see thrashed around about Steve Jobs, they've been put out on the internet so many times. And if you've read around Apple for a while, then you know that you'll have heard the stories before. But there was a lot of new stuff in this book, which I found really quite interesting, and also learning about Apple's philosophy and approach to simplifying things was really good. Interesting to think of that something being really simple is actually one of the hardest things to achieve. And if you read the book, you'll understand just exactly why this is. So that's, as I say, it's well worth a look at this book, Insanely Simple by Ken Segal. Like I say, we'll put something in the show notes. Have a look. It's you can get it for about £10 on Amazon, and I'm sure it's available as an old-fashioned printed copy as well, Kindle, iOS, and so on. So please have a read. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. The final thing to move along to tonight is just to wrap up by saying where you can find us all. You can find myself on at Rich Harkness on Twitter. You can find Johnny at Johnny underscore Winter on Twitter, and you can find Jacob at Penderworth on Twitter. I also look after the at BTTM podcast, so you can follow along on there as well, and we'd love to hear from you any tips and suggestions, things that you would like to hear us discuss on the show would be greatly appreciated. Also, if you haven't left us a review in the iTunes store, please do so we can get some more follow-up feedback and more listeners. I hope it hasn't been too painful tonight listening to myself. And I shall leave you now with the wonderful work of Mr. Tariq Greenfield and his fabulous recording, which makes up our exit music. No doubt the best part of this show by a long shot. We'll see you next week.
That was episode 13 of Back to the Mac. Thanks very much to Richard Harkness. Back to the Mac is from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about Q Broadcasting at q.am. That's q-u-e.am. Thanks very much to Tariq Greenfield for the intro and outro music. It's all made with Mac sounds, you know.
Apple Macintosh.